Business is simple. It's just not easy. We focus on three things to help you run and grow your business more easily: talent, sales, and how to scale. Can it be that simple? Talent. Develop a robust recruiting, vetting, and training process to help capable people and then help them to become who and what they want to be. Sales. Have a logical go-to-market strategy. Build the sales and marketing structure and plan around it, and then attack and execute the plan with fanatical consistency. Scale. Know where you're going, why you're going. Share with others why they would want to join you. Be clear on who's allowed to join you and what they'll need to do to stay on board. Anticipate roadblocks. Avoid them before you get stuck. And then when you do hit one, and you will, stay calm, problem solve, and find resources to get unstuck. Sounds simple, right? Simple to understand, but not easy to do. Join us as we focus on the tips and tricks and hacks for running a profitable, hyper-growth business. We'll share real-world horror stories and celebrate the victory sagas that will inspire you. This is the Talent, Sales, and Scale Show. Hey everybody, thanks for joining us for this episode of the Talent, Sales, and Scale Show. So this is going to be a little bit of a change here. Instead of going in the business world, we're going to the university, the higher education world, and we're going to be talking to Steve Tanzilli. Ah, give me a right. How do I pronounce that right? I'm so English.
Tanzilli, you're getting there.
Tanzilli, son of a gun, you would think I'd get that. So he comes to us. He's the dean of the Roland School of Business from Point Park. We've been having a number of different conversations. And the reason that Steve's on the line with us today is they at Point Park are building out a whole entire selling center that's going to have technology and training and a lot of really cool stuff. So one of the key necessities as us as business owners, as we're building out our growth, the reason for the name of this podcast, Talent, Sales, and Scale Show, is we desperately need talent. And ideally, we have talent that are career ready. And it's a new term that I learned from Steve, career ready as soon as they join us. So that's going to be the idea here today. So with all of that said, welcome, Steve. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. This is great.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So Steve and I, we go back a little ways, and we met just maybe a couple of weeks before the initial shutdown, so we're almost a year into it, so we're picking back up the conversation. So the topic today is, all right, Steve, why in the world should we listen to you on what universities are doing to help us to prepare students for sales and marketing? Because, you know, everybody thinks they know sales, everybody thinks that they know marketing. So what are you doing to prepare these students, and how can we as a business community better utilize the resources of the university? So that's the topic. Why should we listen to you about those items?
Yeah, well, why you should listen to me is because we're trying to listen to you guys.
Oh.
You know, we're at Point Park, you know, we are building students into what I always refer to as career ready. And so I've been dean now going on 4 years. I've been affiliated with the university for much longer. And my whole mission is measuring success, not just our students graduating in a timely manner, but are they securing jobs in their chosen field? And I believe you secure a job in your chosen field by actually doing it. So internships and co-op are embedded into our curriculum. I've always been a big believer in a little bit less book and more real world knowledge. So going out into the marketplace, talking to our alums, talking to industry professionals like you, Brian, to make sure that our curriculum is properly aligned with the skills that our students need to know, you know, to be employable. And when you look at the landscape, sales and marketing is a growing field. And there are tremendous opportunities there. And so as we build our curriculum, and as we are proud to unveil a brand new sales and innovation lab that'll open in our business school this fall, it was done with painstaking conversations and a lot of deep dives to make sure that what we're building in terms of software, equipment, layout, curriculum, faculty, is what these students need to be employed.
Yeah, so a lot on that that intro. So thank you for that. I'm going to start with the end and work backwards to the beginning. Sure. Let's talk about, as you're building out this sales center, what's changed? I mean, the what you had envisioned pre-pandemic, when you took us around the tour and you were showing us what you're going to do. Tell me about what's changed, and I'll have a follow-up question to that.
Yeah, I mean, what changed, of course, is we're moving into a much more virtual world. And, you know, the hope, of course, is that we get back to some sort of normalcy come fall or you know, 2022. But I don't think we're ever going to remove the virtual side of the house. I mean, we've had to learn, you know, from an education standpoint, that we're doing a lot more, you know, online and hybrid classes. So the sales lab, you know, is going to be a 1,300 square foot structure. And we needed to pivot and look at how can we leverage the physical structure to do more in the virtual world, to make sure that we are, once again, satisfying where the industry is going to best serve our students and hopefully be a resource for the Pittsburgh community.
Yeah, it was so if you think about it, it was almost a blessing that it happened today, that this pandemic happened today, because it would have been a real challenge if you built for on-prem.
Yeah.
Resources, and then all of a sudden everything changed. Now it's curious. So you've seen that. You're saying, oh my gosh, learning's changed. We need more flexibility, and we're doing this. And Point Park, for those of you who aren't from Pittsburgh, why don't you give, you know, what used to be a really good point maybe, or downside maybe, where is Point Park located?
We are located right in downtown Pittsburgh. We have about 4,200 students. There are around 1,000 students in my business school, and then we have about 1,200 that were living right downtown. And so for me, one of the things I've had to change focus on with this pandemic is, while I've always been hyper-focused on trying to provide our students with the most dynamic, innovative, substantive curriculum, I've quickly realized that as Pittsburgh goes, you know, Point Park's going to go. I mean, we are literally located in downtown Pittsburgh. So as we build things like the sales lab and other initiatives, I'm not just doing it with an eye toward helping students. I'm now doing it with an eye to try to help Pittsburgh recover. And I think it's incumbent upon us as a business school located in a downtown market to do that and try to provide the community with educational output that can hopefully get the city back on its feet.
Yeah. And so my guess is you've seen traffic plummet in town, and it used to be the city drew people in, but now there's a mass exodus, especially in the major markets like Seattle. A lot of the higher population and higher cost places like California and New York, there's a mass exodus to Texas and Tennessee and some of these other states. So with you in Pittsburgh having to pivot more to a virtual reality or a more flexible offering, you know, I think is a critical key piece, and one that I want those that are listening to realize that the university, well, I don't want to put words in your mouth. My guess is your goal, Steve, you as a university, especially the dean of the university there, is to see what trends are happening and go skate to the puck, as Gretzky always used to say. I got to skate to the puck as opposed to build what is or what was.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's less than last numbers I saw were less than 12% occupancy, you know, downtown. You know, as you can imagine, many of our students are, you know, staying home and working their classes remote. You know, the hope, of course, is that with springtime and with the vaccine, we start to see that 12 or so percent occupancy commercial wise grow, but I don't think we're ever going to get back to anywhere near 100%. So how do you engage with this new phenomena of virtual learning? You know, the business school was built on internships and co-ops and embedding our students into the physical offices of folks in Pittsburgh. And now having to do this much more virtually, you know, has been a challenge. But then I also look at it as an opportunity, because we've been able to expand our network throughout the country and been able to bring in folks from, you know, California, New York, et cetera, to engage with our students that otherwise, you know, they wouldn't have been able to do so.
Yeah. So, okay. Now,
we have to then, as business owners, do that same thing. And from a sales perspective, I'm seeing a couple of things happen. One, the old relational style of selling is no longer effective. So it wasn't terribly effective to begin with. Relationship is the core focus, right? We have to have relationship, but that's barrier to entry. That's just a given. If you don't have that relationship, so what? And too many times, especially in the old ways, we'd show up and we were professional visitors, right? We'd know these people really well, have great relationships with them, know all about them, yet never sell anything or never change the behavior to start using our product or service. In today's world, whenever you're virtual, that relationship sale is gone, and you're seeing a lot of that old guard retiring because they can't change to the virtual technology. They can't change to the ubiquitousness of knowledge, because it used to be in the old days that sellers had all the knowledge, and that's why you needed them. Now the knowledge is out there, and so there has to be a different approach to sales. So I would think, and you can tell me if I'm wrong here, I'd think that that would be a key place where the universities are stepping up with students to learn this, or tell me a little bit more.
Yeah, about I mean, you know, I think our graduates are well positioned because, you know, they've grown up with this technology. You know, one of the challenges I had from higher ed is, you know, we were, of course, when we went online in March, it was sudden, right? Suddenly everything, you know, got shifted. And we had an immediate concern to make sure our students had the right connectivity and equipment. But the issue that I think many universities discounted was faculty, right? You have a lot of faculty that have taught the same way for 30, 40 years. And so getting them up to speed on how to properly deliver a substantive learning education in a virtual world was a challenge. It wasn't so much the students as much as was the faculty, because to your point, you know, the students, they know how to do this stuff. Right. And quite frankly, you know, when I have an issue with Zoom or Teams or Google Hangouts or any of the other platforms, right, I'm not reaching out to my counterparts. I'm reaching out to a student. So, you know, they're really positioned much better than ever before, I think, to succeed in this. The issue for me, though, of course, with sales, it's about that engagement. Now, we don't have the personal contact that we once did, but, you know, how do you command a presence, you know, in a little box, right? However big these boxes are. I would always was a big preacher of, you know, it's so important to try to teach students how to command a presence when they walk in a room, right? But now we got to teach them how do you command a presence in a little screen, right? And be able to still accomplish the same goal.
Correct. And as you're going through right now, there's bings and buzzes and everything else going on. Right. And
that's my dog. So in the, so this is 2021. You know, where I'm working from home today, so
No worries. We have dogs, we have kids in the background, but that's the new reality, right? That is the present reality, and that's really not going to change too terribly much. So,
and I, you know, and I've said one thing, Brian. I said it's made us a lot more tolerant too, right? It's totally acceptable to have family members running around in the background, or hey, let me pause real quick. So, I think one of the positives of all of this is we've become a much more tolerant, understanding, hopefully kinder, gentler, you know, population.
Yeah. And so as the younger people start to progress and experience, we'll call them getting older, right? Yep. So the millennials are moving up in title and management levels. Gen Zs are rolling into place. Millennials and Gen Zs, they're used to texting. They're used to having conversations over. Well, I wouldn't say email, but really text and Snapchats and videos and all this stuff. Has the university started to take that into account as your teaching curriculum? Or so that's the first question. I'll have a follow up to it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the new form of communication is, you know, is that shorter version of text and emails. I mean, the days of writing letters and even talking on the phone is just not there. So, yeah, you know, we have shifted our focus to make sure that, you know, students understand, you know, the impact of social media. And I always talk about the fact that, you know, we're trying to teach students how to use social media, not as a toy, but as a tool, right? As a tool to succeed and find employment and, you know, understand the power of a text message and, you know, the appropriateness of you know, what to communicate, you know, in such a communication. It's all changed. It's a lot more informal. It's a lot, you know, quicker. There is no such thing, I believe, as kind of the 9-to-5 anymore, because, you know, we're always accessible. We always have our phone with us, and it isn't, hey, I'm out of the office, catch you tomorrow. You know, we have each other's cell phones, and there's this constant need, you know, for constant communication and feedback.
Yeah. And so as the Gen Zs and the millennials move up, they're used to talking like this, talking remotely, and they believe that's relational. And if we're of the old guard and we believe that we have to do face-to-face, a lot of the old guard now is scared to do face-to-face. Or they're finding that doing virtual, at least in the early stages of discovery, in the early stage of solution development, makes more sense than jumping in the car and spending a half hour, 45 minutes, an hour to go down the street, or jumping on the T and everything else. So that's happening, and we just have to take that as the new reality. And then I guess a question to you, and I'll go into how can we better partner with universities, and you would ask, how can we better partner with you? How do we teach the younger generation communication skills of how to look somebody eyeball to eyeball, to have that business acumen, because there's not a lot of that we're seeing happening right now. I mean, any sense, and you can say, hey, we haven't addressed that yet, and I'm okay with that, but any sense of how is that happening, or what's Point Park doing for that today?
You know, it's about practice, and it's about training. I mean, we had the pandemic hit in March, and I will tell you, as part of our, we have a career prep course, which is a requirement of our sophomores. And in that class, as of, you know, last spring, you know, we literally would do the physical handshake. We literally would spend time having students practice looking in somebody's eyes. The interview was done in a conference room, mock interview style. We now have had to pivot, right? And we're doing these interviews virtually. And the more you practice, the more you really train for it, the better the students are going to be prepared. So, you know, everything from telling students, you know, I don't care what kind of, you know, pants you might have on, but, you know, make sure you've got your, you know, a dress shirt and you're, you know, in a firm chair, and you've got your phones off, and you've got your alerts off. And you just like showing up at an interview early, right? Zoom in early to make sure everything works. And, you know, does the background look right? Is it in practice? And we now spend time with inflection and tone of voice, once again, to try to, you know, kind of command that presence in that little box. And so it comes down to practice. And then it comes down to talking to the industry and saying, you know, what are you seeing, right? If you could create a course, or if you could come in and tell a student, these are the keys to success, what are they? Because we want to then communicate and relay that to our students.
Yeah. Well, and you gave some really key insights off of that, Steve. So whenever, for example, one of the tools that we use is on-demand video interviewing.
Yeah.
That way it really helps to shorten down screening time, and that's getting more and more prevalent. And so you have to, like, your eyes and your hands, and you got to move around. And it, we oftentimes, or at least I do, there's some people out there that have just beautiful smiles, and they light up, and they're so engaging. And so we have to practice that, and you have to bring energy to these. So whenever you're on the sales call, you have to bring in, and I use a stand-up desk so you can move around and engage them a little bit more. And that's a critical key piece. So I'd really say to those listening, if you're looking for a position or looking to get hired, make sure that you're engaged in that video, that you practice it up before you go on, and that you're delivering energy. And whenever you're on a sales call, that you're looking the person in the eye, because I had a guest on just a while back, Amy Volos, was really sharp. I used to put the screen up here, and I was looking up here. She goes, that looks weird. What are you doing? So you make these small adjustments that you're looking into the screen in the camera. So that's really good advice. What else would you say out there?
Yeah. I this is a piece of advice I gave prior to the pandemic, and I think is still relevant. It's about likability too. You know, I believe people hire people they like, and people promote people they like. And, you know, I would tell students, try to make sure you're likable in an interview, right? You want to, you know, humanize, have some humanization there. And so, yes, it's virtual, but be likable. And so part of that is, right? Smiling and being engaged and asking questions and being an active listener. You can still do that virtually. Crucially important, you know, in person, but you know, those many of those skill sets, I firmly believe, are transferable to the virtual world.
Yeah, so I love it. So, and this is yet again, nothing new under the sun.
No.
The principles are all the same. The yep. practice might be a little bit different.
Yeah, and you know, it's a lot of the same pieces of advice I would give students who had that back in the day would have a phone interview. I would tell students, and it's similar. I would tell students, okay, you have a phone interview. I still want you to put the dress shirt on.
Yeah.
And I still want you sitting in a firm, you know, chair. And I still want you to make sure that you're in a quiet environment and, you know, you're not going to be distracted or the roommate isn't going to come busting through the door. I want to make sure that you have a good connection, just like we do here, right? And I talk a lot of in the phone interview was about inflection, tone of voice, right? Trying to be likable through the receiver. And the same, you know, the same goes for Zoom and other platforms.
100%. Okay, so and that's key, right? Is as much as we try to overcomplicate things, and maybe it's just me, maybe I'm the guilty one, but there, it's really not anything different. We have to communicate effectively. And it's simply a different medium through which we're effectively communicating. And so those small little nuances that you learned in that face-to-face are now the small little nuances that we pick up over video. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if it's Gong or Chorus or one of those that shared with you the stat that, so let's take this to a sales perspective. In a sales perspective, if I'm on video at least one time in the sales process, it's that much more effective. And mm-hmm. so by you teaching your students to do that, they're going to be even more effective showing up. And my guess is they're so comfortable with being on TikTok and Snapchat. They're already used to these things. They're likely more natural there. So are you doing anything specifically to help them to do these videos? I mean, is there any part of that in your curriculum? Or, and again, you might still be building this out. So forgive me if I'm...
You know, I think we are still building it out. I think it does come down, once again, as I said, to practice. And, you know, and you can imagine, you know, we do have to change our curriculum. So back to this, you know, career prep course that we've taught really the same way for a long, long time. Now having to adapt to, you know, virtual interviews and, you know, how to share a screen. You know, Brian, we never thought that we would have to teach students how to use Microsoft Outlook Calendar. you know, and once again, you know, this was something I talked to industry professionals and they said, Steve, you know, students have to know how to use calendar. I live and die by my, you know, by my calendar. And students having to just understand how do you set a meeting? How do you send a Zoom link? Should the meeting be 30 minutes, an hour? Who do you invite? You know, how do you share materials and make sure it's properly aligned for the screen? Who does the introduction, right? Do you start the meeting? Do you wait for somebody? If somebody's running late, right? Okay, meeting started at 10. How long do you wait, right? It still depends on who you're waiting for.
Right.
So those are things that we're talking about. But once again, a lot of that was still the same.
So now that's a lot on what the university is doing to help prepare students for the workforce. You're building out this sales curriculum and sales center. So we'll stay in touch with you on that one. Now, how about us from an employer standpoint? So as mm-hmm. we're looking to employ your freshly minted, graduated students, what do we do? I mean, how do we best partner with you?
Well, I think first and foremost, we need the industry. Those that are, you know, living and working and breathing it every day to make sure that the skills we're teaching are relevant, helping us get ahead of where the trends are, helping us understand where these emerging technologies are coming from, so that once again, we can make sure that our curriculum properly aligns. So just keeping us informed as to where things are going, where you think they're headed is crucially important. organizations, clubs, affiliations that you think would be important for students and or colleges and universities to partner with is crucial. Giving your time and commitment to our students, coming in and zooming into a class, being willing to mentor a student who may have a question or want to bounce something off you or get some guidance. That's that personal connection, albeit virtual, that can really change a student's life, knowing that they have somebody in an industry that they aspire to be in that, you know, that's looking out for them and is giving them some knowledge and expertise. And you know, those things are crucial. You know, really being our eyes and ears to where this industry's going. Because, you know, it takes a good year in higher ed to transform curriculum.
Okay.
And so, you know, I need to not just know what's important today, but I need more importantly to know what do you see in 22, 23 and beyond so that, you know, we can build this out. And then we're always looking for high quality faculty, right? Faculty that are industry focused, that are immersed in this, that can come into a classroom and tell students, hey, I'm not teaching this because it's February 4th, the day of our podcast. You know, this is, okay, here we go. This is what you got to know. And here are the steps I'm going to teach you to get you there.
So that's interesting. Now, I would have not thought that you would look to the marketplace for faculty. I thought Absolutely. That you would need, a person with a doctorate that's steeped in academics to come and teach at the university.
Part-time faculty, you know, for sure. We are always eager to connect with industry professionals because many times those are the ones that are hiring our students because they get a real feel for the student because they have him or her in the classroom. One of the benefits I think of Point Park is our accrediting standards are, different per se than, you know, some other institutions, meaning we are permitted to hire full-time tenure track faculty who have, they don't necessarily need that PhD. They don't necessarily need, you know, that terminal degree. I have some outstanding faculty who have MBAs. And at other institutions, they most likely would not be employable, but thank goodness they are at Point Park.
Yeah.
Because what they bring is what I'm looking for, which is the real world. Here are the things you need to know. And many of our tenure track faculty are still working in the business. And so being able to come into the classroom and say, I know we're looking at chapter 6 today, but let me tell you the issue I had last night at work.
Yeah.
Or let me tell you what I'm facing, you know, today, and get our students engaged. I think that is what brings about the most robust educational experience is getting our students, you know, into the weeds and understanding everything affects everything.
Well, so
that come from faculty.
Yeah, and no, let's hit on that because I can't remember exactly how you phrased it, but yeah, I think you said less book and more real. So let's unpack that a little bit. How is Point Park, or how are we hoping that other universities are less book and more real? Because let me share with you, I'll be completely transparent here.
Yeah.
One of the things about academia that frustrates me is often I believe this theory because I read it, even though it doesn't work in practice, or I don't believe this practice. I don't believe that this isn't working because I've read it in the book once that it should. So how do we get past that and do this less book, more real approach that you're talking about?
Well, I'll be honest. I don't think it's for every institution. We at Point Park are well positioned to deliver this type of education. I think a lot has to do with our location. We are immersed in downtown Pittsburgh, I think a major market when it comes to employment opportunities, whether it's for-profit, non-for-profit, cultural, arts, sports. And I've just been a firm believer, as is our administration, that you learn more by doing. And so we have internships embedded into our curriculum. We're the only school of business in the region to offer co-op for all of our business majors. In addition, co-op, which is a traditional 5-year program, at Point Park is 4 years. I encourage my faculty to, it's okay to spend a little bit less time in the textbook if you think what you bring into the classroom, whether it's a speaker, or a case study, that really is going to help them,
Okay. Now, you always hear these horror stories of employers that take advantage of interns.
Yeah.
And then interns probably getting frustrated that they have this idea of, oh, I'm going to learn so much. And then they show up and they're pushing paper and not doing anything whatsoever about what they're studying. So how can we better align that internship, mentorship, co-op process? Any best practices there that we should do from an employer standpoint?
Yeah. Communication. I think it comes down to communication. My experience many years working with internships and then helping create our co-op program. Many times employers, they have their best intent, right? They want to help young people, and they want to help young people become successful, but they don't understand that there is a lot of work in training and taking on a student. And so we need to be active communicators to let the employer know, here are our expectations, right? Do they align with what you're looking for? And then really do a good job on our end, trying to find that student that matters. And then managing expectations. Every day is not going to be perfect. there may be times where, as a student, you might be looking around for something to do, but that's also a great time for you to get up, go introduce yourself to others, and be proactive, right? Don't sit back and things come to you, because that's not how the real world works. So communication, really educating employers as to what are our educational expectations, and then trying to do a good job of matching the student that really fit, the mission and vision and work.
Yeah, so I would think that the company would need a fairly robust training or onboarding experience for the intern, just like they would for a new employee, because that's really what that intern is supposed to be, as a new employee that's getting real world experience. Is that a right assumption, or am I wrong on that?
Yeah, no. I mean, in the perfect world, that would be the great way to go up. We have a terrific career readiness center. Counselors do work with employers to get them on this. But once again, it's communication. It's touching base with the employer, touching base with the student. And it's just trying to keep on top of, are both parties meeting up to their expectations? I look at them as internship sites as partners. One of the first questions I always ask is, looking at our curriculum, what would be that class that you think we should teach? Right? If you could teach our students one or two things, what would it be? Right? So I'm not just looking for, hey, take a student, they work there, they get some academic credit, great. I really want to foster a relationship that, perhaps leads to new curriculum, leads to a new major, leads to new faculty, leads to a new way to go about that.
Nice. So that's really interesting point, Steve. So really what you're saying is we as employers are getting these internships, helping them, like you said, get experience, but then you're also looking for feedback from the employers to help innovate, to help find the next thing, like you said, to find faculty and staff and new curriculum. That's interesting. I wouldn't have ever thought that. So a really tight feedback loop is important. And really what I'm finding from these couple of conversations that we've had both offline and here today is this is really community involvement. I never looked at the university as being, I knew there's community involvement, but I didn't realize how tightly aligned that you're looking to be with the business world and that ecosystem, that community.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important for us to be an engaged community player. I want our kids to stay here, right? I want them to understand that there are some really innovative and dynamic opportunities in Pittsburgh, get them exposed to it and help them grow and bring Pittsburgh back.
Okay. Well, this is an important piece, and I'm glad that we're having this conversation. In my last position, there was a young lady by the name of Lindsay Demetrius. I don't know if she'll ever listen to this, but Lindsay Demetrius had a really good internship. And that internship, she poured her life into those students. And those students benefited massively. And a lot of times out of that internship, they ended up working for us or getting placed with one of our clients. And that internship really opened my eyes to what a good co-op or a good internship, whatever the right language is. By the way, what in the world's the difference between an internship and a co-op?
A few things. An internship is generally 3 academic credits, part-time work. Co-ops are, in our world, there are 6 academic credits and are considered full-time work. And co-ops, the requirement is they have to be paid. So many times internships are, you know, your first foray into an industry, 3 credits, 15 to 20 hours a week, unpaid. Co-op, 6 academic credits, 32 hours a week or more. And then the pay has to be at what a entry-level wage would be. So it's a much more substantive learning opportunity. And we layer these experiences where you'll do an internship first, and then, you know, if appropriate, take the next step up to a co-op.
Interesting. So if you're looking at career path and career development, you can start right away. You can start from internship, graduate to co-op to full-time to moving up through the ranks.
And really where we start is even smaller than that. We start with our freshmen. They all work in some sort of a shadowing or mentoring program. And that's, you know, a couple touch points. So we look to align them with the industry or company they aspire to work in. And then that freshman year, right out of the chute, they are shadowing somebody for 15, 20 hours during the course of a semester. Wow. Those are important because it demonstrates to the student, you know, what are the skills that they may need to know if they want to work at that job. It also helps them get a better understanding of what it is they may or may not want to do. So that's the freshman level. And then internship, as soon as you're a second semester sophomore, junior, you can do an internship. And then co-op is really, really supposed to be that last year. You know, ideally that last semester where you do a co-op and then hopefully you transition right into the company that's engaged. And so I feel if you do a shadowing, you do an internship or two, you do a co-op, you're an active, engaged student, a good member of not just the campus community, but Pittsburgh, I think you're going to be well positioned to be employable.
So how do we channel our inner Lindsay Demetrius and really set up a robust process? I mean, how can I, as an employer, let's say I'm bought in now, I want to be the next Lindsay Demetrius. Yeah. How do I get this moving? Who do I talk to? What are my steps?
Yeah, I think the steps are you communicate to me. And then we work to align the opportunities with the particular faculty, because that's another thing. You know, we have faculty oversight. So if Lindsay's going to look to fill something in accounting, right? I'm not going to be the one that's going to be overseeing it. I'm not in accounting. You know, I'll have an accounting faculty member, you know, work with the student and advise the company too. Because another thing we have to do is we have to be honest as to, you know, what our students know at that particular moment in time to make sure that, once again, it's a beneficial opportunity. So you reach out to the business school, reach out to me. We'll connect with our Career Readiness Center. We have highly capable staff over there that's what they do. They work hard to foster and improve relationships with the corporate community to not only provide a benefit to the company, but then also provide a benefit to our students, which we of course hope leads to employment and them staying in the region.
Okay, got it. So I'm going to ask this in two parts, one for the student and one for the employer. What's one of the biggest things that we should avoid as a student going through this? How can we prevent our students from getting hurt? What are some lessons learned where you saw that, hey, don't do this because it won't work out well from a student's perspective?
Lack of communication, lack of being receptive to change, and managing expectations. One of the things that I think is crucial for students to understand is that, you know, people that work in the industry, they're busy. And as much as you think you may be their first priority, you might not be. And don't take it personally if you don't get a return email or phone call. And through that, students hopefully learn what I call professional persistence. And there is a fine line between professional persistence and being a real pain. So understanding that, understanding the corporate culture, is important. Understanding chain of command. You know, many times student opportunities go sideways because they reach out to the president of the company as opposed to, you know, the account manager who's their direct connection. On the employer side, I think it's taking on more than they can handle. And many times it's out of complete goodwill. They want to help students. And so I always say, you know what, sometimes a little less is more. So don't take on 5 or 6 students for the sake of taking on 5 or 6 students. Let's start with 1 or 2, because there is a lot of work that goes into oversighting, you know, a 19, 20, 21 year old. And understanding that, you know, students, you know, they don't know everything and they still need some guidance. They still need some direction. And this generation, for the most part, they need a lot more consistent feedback than we probably ever did. You know, they need that, hey, yes, things are going right, or hey, I think we need to look at changing this a lot earlier in the cycle than usual.
Interesting. Okay. Well, any particular resources that you might suggest? Let's go to the business side. Any suggested resources that the businesses should really look into from the university's perspective, from either it's around talent or around selling, marketing, or around scaling the business? Any resources that we should know about that maybe you're privy to in the university that we're not in the commercial space?
No, I think it's talking to us. I think, one of the things I love to do is I love to share curriculum. I love to say, you know, for example, here's our curriculum in sales and marketing. Here's our curriculum in, human resource management. You know, you all are working every day in these particular industries. You know, do you think our learning outcomes and objectives properly match what you're looking for in a new employee? Because once again, if we're not serving the business community and producing high quality graduates that are career ready, then I don't think we're necessarily doing what we're meant to do.
Yeah.
So being an active participant in the academic process.
Okay, nice. And again, because universities can be so big and so many different people, what are maybe some of the titles or some of the points of contacts that we should reach out to?
Their career center.
Okay.
In our world, it's the Career Readiness Center. So anything around careers or the employment office, they're the ones that are most likely on the front lines helping students with resumes and looking for jobs. They're the ones who are most likely posting, part-time, full-time, internship, co-op opportunities for their students. Looking at, particular academic chairs. So, looking at the directory in a business school, for example, and seeing who the chair would be, because that's the individual that's overseeing a particular segment of curriculum and faculty that would align with, the company's interests.
Okay, nice. That's helpful. And then any resources that you're using, books, podcasts, guides that we should take a look at, or maybe some curriculum that we should look at?
I think our thing is we try to demonstrate to our students that they need to be aware of what's going on around them. So I tell our students, read and watch outside your comfort level. So if you're a sports guy, it's great. The first thing you do is you go on your phone and check ESPN. That's great. But you know what? Take a look at Bloomberg, right? Get on MSNBC. Take a look at the Wall Street Journal and understand that everything affects everything. I think the most successful graduates are not those that just pass accounting, econ, fine. They understand what's going on in the world and why that matters. So we're really trying to build a real, much more holistic student that is community focused, that has some work experience, that has secured good grades, and more than anything, is a valuable member of our community.
Got it. Okay. And then we talked about this a little bit earlier, but trends that you see, and I would couch this trends that you would see from Well, let's go with trends that you would see from a university community or university business business alliance perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if I'm answering the question, but, you know, we look at the Allegheny County economic development reports.
Okay.
And they put out a comprehensive articles and data on, you know, emerging careers. And, you know, they beam it out, you know, 5, 6, 7 years down the line. So, for example, you know, that's the reason why we have reinvested heavily in our applied technology major. You know, we created a MIS program at the graduate level because the future of Pittsburgh, there's a lot of tech jobs, not just currently, but coming. We have a healthcare administration program in our business school, because once again, you look at, you know, the aging population, in particular in Allegheny County, and you look, where are those new jobs? Where are the jobs headed? Well, they're headed in healthcare administration. So we aligned curriculum, sales and marketing, right? Big boom in jobs, you know, pre-COVID, you know, was sales and marketing. So we better get on this. Hospitality, that was something I launched right before COVID, because you look at the reporting and you'll be aware. I mean, there were new hotels being built every week in downtown Pittsburgh, new restaurants being opened. And I looked around and said, you know, we could serve the community by having curriculum, you know, aligned to these new entities, and all that will come back in some form or fashion. And so, you know, looking at data and trying to have data drive decisions is what we're trying to do.
It's a great, great suggestion. Predictive analytics, data for hiring is one of our key tenets, and same with data for sales execution. So I love that, as well as scaling. So data. Yeah.
And you look right now, I mean, okay, logistics, right? If you don't think there are going to be opportunities in logistics, right? And data analytics, I mean, my gosh. So, right? So, you know, we're really building out at the MBA level a program in supply chain management, in data analytics, because that is where things are going.
Nice. Well, Steve, I can't thank you enough for your insights here and for your time that you're spending with us. So tell us a little bit about who should reach out to you, how should they reach out to you, and why should people reach out to you?
Well, I'd love to hear from anybody who has a real interest in trying to help our students. I'd love to talk to anyone that has a real interest in trying to help Pittsburgh and help Pittsburgh get back on its feet. I'm always open and receptive to ideas for new curriculum. I always welcome those that want to give up some time and come talk to a class or mentor, a student club or group. Really just anyone who wants to be engaged with the next generation of Pittsburghers, I would love to talk with you.
Perfect. Well, I can't thank you enough, Steve. Really insightful. Took a couple of different twists that I wasn't anticipating, but now I have my roadmap to find out how we're going to bring on interns and co-ops and really participate in this. I really look forward to it. So thanks so much. Really appreciate it. Everybody listening, get after it. Take advantage of these lessons here. Knowledge for knowledge sake is pointless. Let's get it for knowledge for application sake and get after it. So any parting shots, Steve, to say?
No, let's just all work together to get through this and make sure that we are better than ever on the other side.
There you go. Hey, let's do that. Thanks, everyone. See ya.